Hello, this is Paul Saunders. Welcome again to the Three Questions podcast. I'm really delighted to be here today with my Center for the National Interest colleague, Greg Priddy. Greg is a senior fellow at the center and covers the Middle East region. He has a long background as an observer of politics, security, energy, and other topics in the Middle East and the Persian Gulf. So thank you, Greg, for taking the time to join me today. Thanks. I thought it would be interesting to talk today about the still relatively new Pakistani-Saudi defense agreement, which to me at least seems like kind of a big deal for a variety of reasons. But I, of course, am not an expert on the Middle East, and you are. So I'd really kind of welcome your view on that. And perhaps we could start with a fairly straightforward question. Just if you could explain to the Three Questions podcast vast listener base, what's in the agreement? When was it signed? Kind of, you know, why do you think it was signed? And what's it?
So the key thing is this is an actual mutual defense treaty. The wording in it talks about treating an act of aggression against either state as targeting both states. So, you know, like the NATO treaty, you know, there are consultations, et cetera, so that is perhaps a little bit less than an automatic military response, but it certainly is a treaty of alliance that involves a meaningful mutual defense commitment by both of them. It also enshrines a lot of the defense cooperation that has been going on between Pakistan and the kingdom going all the way back to the 1960s. So this is an old relationship that, you know, that aspect of it isn't new, but a formal mutual defense commitment was not something that most of us really expected to see happen until it did. And of course, the timing was not a coincidence, coming shortly after the Israeli strike on Doha, which had rattled Gulf Arabs' sense of protection from the United States relationship. So I think this is kind of broadening that, trying to get, under another nuclear umbrella, trying to have another big friend outside that has a commitment to them when, you know, the Gulf Arabs as a whole have really been looking at their U.S. ties as slightly, at least, more questionable.
Pivoting a little bit here for the second question, what do you think is most important about the agreement for Americans? You know, as we're kind of looking at the Middle East from some distance.
The magnitude of this really has not sunk in for a lot of folks in Washington. I think among people who follow Gulf security, it has. But the search for alternatives by our Gulf Arab partners and their sense, you know, this has been a long time coming. This isn't just about the attack in Doha. But there has been, you know, a sense among the GCC states that the U.S. commitment was weakening, going all the way back to, you know, the late 2010s when Iran had made a missile attack against Saudi oil facilities that caused considerable damage, and President Trump didn't pull the trigger on any sort of U.S. military action to respond to that. You know, we also had missile attacks on the Emirates in 2022 that, you know, coming in from Yemen that were linked to Iran, and they felt that the U.S. should have done something about that. So, you know, the U.S. has never had a formal treaty commitment there, but we have been seen as an outside security guarantor, and the Gulf Arabs are becoming, you know, increasingly uncomfortable, really, you know, across the GCC, with the notion that the U.S. is the only outside guarantor you need, because it's not going to act unless the threshold is quite high, is what those two cases seem to prove. And then there's, you know, the Doha attack brings in a new wrinkle, which is if Israel is a security threat to the GCC, which is not something that Americans generally think about, but it's definitely something that Gulf Arabs are thinking about now. You know, one senior GCC official I spoke to recently referred to this as a paradigm shift, which is pretty strong wording when he's talking about, you know, the spectrum of threats that they could face, and that they now see Israel lashing out in some way or striking in their capitals as a real threat that might happen again. And so I think that's, you know, the main thing for Americans to think about. I'm not suggesting that we ought to do everything the Gulf Arabs want us to do. I think they would like a level of U.S. involvement that's probably beyond what I would favor. But that's the main takeaway for us, is that the Gulf Arabs are looking for other outside partners and taking the multi-vectored nature of their outside relationships and extending that to security. You know, one other final point on that. Pakistan is problematic in one way, in that a closer Saudi-Pakistan relationship, because of the close Pakistan-China relationship, you know, has questions over it when it comes to U.S. military secrets and technologies that we might provide, you know, particularly if they have close relationships between the Saudi and Pakistani air forces and China kind of hooked into that on the Pakistani side. So that might also raise a few questions security-wise.
Thank you again. And for our listeners, this is Paul Saunders talking to Greg Priddy, my Center for the National Interest colleague, the center's senior fellow focused on the Middle East. Greg, so now we're at the third and final question. One of the more interesting aspects of this agreement in some respects is the fact that Pakistan is a nuclear weapon state. And, you know, when a state possessing nuclear weapons signs a mutual defense agreement with another country, that is at least implicitly possibly extending a nuclear umbrella, or those of us in the policy community like this arcane term, extended nuclear deterrence, you know, nuclear deterrence that extends beyond one's own borders. Do we have reason to believe that Pakistan is extending a nuclear umbrella to Saudi Arabia? And if so, how do you see the consequences of that for the United States and for the region?
I think that that's exactly why they inked it when they did, is that you had, you know, this paradigm shift where the GCC states had not really perceived much of a security threat from Israel. And then, you know, they got this curveball in the strike on the Hamas operatives in Doha. And that did, you know, they've had a long-standing relationship with Pakistan, but this did kind of drive them toward wanting to be under the nuclear umbrella for somebody who had nuclear warheads. And so I think that was, the relationship's been there for a long time, and this is kind of papering something that's already been a relationship that wasn't formal. But making that formal, I think, was meant as a deterrent, probably to Israel, just saying, you know, we are under someone's nuclear umbrella, regardless of what the Americans do or don't do. And so if the U.S. doesn't restrain you, you should have another reason to feel restraint. The other side of that, though, is that there has long been the existing Pakistan-Saudi security relationship, you know, going back to the 1960s, has always been kind of a Pakistani manpower and now nuclear capability in exchange for Saudi money, which usually comes in the form of subsidized oil that they send there. So there is a very substantial flow of value in the form of subsidized oil going to Pakistan that helps prop them up when they've been teetering on the edge of bankruptcy for a long time. And so I think that, you know, this is something where it does raise the question, if Saudi Arabia ever wanted to proliferate or to pursue, a nuclear, you know, they'd like to have a nuclear power program, they'd like to have enrichment, but if they ever wanted to go beyond that, access to Pakistani facilities, personnel, technology could vault them ahead very quickly. And that's always been something that, you know, people have thought about in the back of their minds, but not really front and center. And this probably brings it to the fore a bit more.
definitely something very important for all of us to think about. Greg, thank you very much for another great three questions conversation. Really terrific to have you with us today.
Thank you.